Well, good morning.
Good morning.
I appreciate Munden reading from Matthew chapter 13 about some of the parables that Jesus spoke. Jesus taught a lot in parables. There's something like 35 to 40 different parables that Jesus spoke. There in Matthew 13, it even says that Jesus didn't teach unless he taught with a parable. And I think Matthew 13 is a good example of some of Jesus' teachings on parables or teachings through parables. And just looking at that, you look at verse 24, the kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in the field. You look at verse 31, the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed. Verse 33, the kingdom of heaven is like leaven. 44, the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field. Verse 45, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking beautiful pearls. Verse 47, kingdom of heaven is like a dragnet. And there's a lot more parables where Jesus uses things that people can understand. He uses earthly stories that compare God's kingdom, in this case, to everyday things so that people can understand something spiritual. And this is a really good teaching method. And Jesus used it often. And earlier this month, I was in a leadership meeting that I put on with some of my managers. And we always like to close the meeting with it's called a power moment. It's just a motivational comment. And the person who was assigned to do that, they used a parable. And I mean, I guess the modern equivalent of a parable. And they, of course, were trying to make a leadership point. But as I was listening to that, I couldn't help but think about the spiritual value of that particular parable. And so that got me thinking, I ought to write a lesson about that. And it may be something that you have heard before. But the story sort of goes like this. I won't go into great detail because you may have heard the story before, but there was a young girl who was complaining about how hard life was for her, some trouble she was having, and her mother takes her into the kitchen and puts three pots of water on the stove and turns them on, and they start to boil. And in one pot she puts a carrot, in the other pot she puts an egg, and in the third pot, she puts some coffee beans. After about 20 minutes, she asked her daughter, "What do you see?" And that's the parable. And I won't tell you the rest because we're going to talk about it and the spiritual implications of that. That's the parable we're going to talk about. And I want to ask you this morning, are you a carrot? Are you an egg? Or are you a coffee bean? See, life is like a boiling pot of water, isn't it? If you think about it, life is hard. And if you haven't had difficult times in your life, you just haven't been around long enough, right? Because life is hard. And sometimes life is harder than at other times. And sometimes life is harder for some people than it is other people. But each one of us has had struggles in life. None of us are going to get through this life unaffected. Romans chapter 3, 23 tells us all of us have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Every one of us is going to have a hard life in some way. It'll be harder for some than others. There'll be times in your life that it's harder than others. But life is filled with trials, with tests, with temptations, with adversity. And this is particularly true for Christians, isn't it? And the Bible makes no bones about it, right? Psalm 34 and 19, many are the afflictions of the righteous. Jesus says in John 16, 33, in this world you will have tribulation. And Peter says in 1 Peter 4, 12 through 14, beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trials which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened to you. If you're a Christian, your life is going to be hard. And because you're a Christian, your life is going to be harder than what it were if you weren't a Christian. And, of course, the challenges of life are, are more than just the temptations to do wrong. Consider for a minute what God did to Job. Satan took Job's wealth. Satan took Job's family. Satan took Job's health. And then he left him with his friends and his wife, who were really terrible comforters. And you think about it, the same kinds of things can happen to each one of us. Now, maybe not all to the magnitude of Job, and maybe not all at once, but which one of us has not dealt with financial troubles? And maybe some of us are experiencing that right now. Which one of us has not had family drama? Maybe you've got family drama right now. Which one of us hasn't dealt with poor health in our life? And maybe you're dealing with poor health now. And which one of us haven't had friends full of bad advice that lack comfort? If you haven't had one of those, I think I can maybe share a few, because there's plenty to go around, right? And maybe you're dealing with that too. Maybe you have a friend or family member who likes to give advice and counsel or try to comfort you, and they're just not very good at it. The point is, life is like a boiling pot of water, because life is hard. And the question is, how are you going to respond to it? You're not going to be able to change that life is hard. Life is hard. That is this world. How are you going to respond? That's the question. So are you a carrot? You think about this. Before being placed in the boiling pot of water, that carrot was hard. It was firm. But shortly after, some time in that hot water, that carrot becomes soft and easily crushed. Most of the world is like a carrot. And I think if we're honest with ourselves, each one of us is like a carrot at some time in our life. And maybe we're like a carrot right now. We're strong and confident, dare I say, arrogant in the face of adversity, trials, and temptations. But then what happens? We just turn into mush, right? That's what happens. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed, lest he fall. Same book, chapter 15, verse 33. Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. Hang out with a bunch of people who are mushy, you're probably going to turn into mush as well. You see, the wickedness of the world all around us can soften our resolve. We can become more tolerant to sin, both sin around us and sin that we have in our lives. And we have to be very careful to avoid the influences of the world to weaken our relationship with God. In James chapter 4, verse 4, we're reminded, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. See, if you bathe yourself in the troubles of the world and you're a carrot, you're going to become soft. You make yourself a friend with the world, you make yourself an enemy to God. 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 through 17. Do not love the world or the things of the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away, and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever. When I think about people in the Bible who are carrots, I think about Demas. And maybe you can think about other people too, but Demas was the one that came to mind. Right? Because when we first learn of Demas, Demas is in, it's at the end of the book of Colossians. Demas is with Paul and Luke. It seems as though Demas is working with Paul and Luke. And Paul felt as though it was important for him to tell the Christians at Colossae that Demas is working with him. A little bit later on in the letter to Philemon, which we just studied, Paul calls Demas his fellow worker. By all accounts, Demas is doing good for God. But then we make our way to 2 Timothy, and something has happened. And we're not really told what has happened, but it's the thing we remember Demas for, isn't it? Because when Paul writes his second letter to Timothy, this is what he says about Demas in chapter 4, verse 10. For Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world, and has departed for Thessalonica. Something happened, and Demas got soft. Demas was a carrot. So I encourage you this morning, don't be a carrot. All the kids are like pumped about that. It's like, I don't like cooked carrots anyway. Don't be a carrot. Well, let me ask you, are you an egg? So when exposed to the boiling water, that soft, runny inside of the egg becomes hardened. On the outside, the egg looks unchanged, but on the inside, it's completely different. Well, surely being an egg is better than being a carrot. Nope. It's not. It's so easy for us to become callous and hardened to the world around us. There's so much sin, so many people living in wickedness with no desire to be righteous. I mean, you and I all know people who just snub their nose at God. And we can become callous to that. We can be so hard that we lose sight of God's grace and His plan of salvation for the lost. And this seems to me to be what happened to James and John. Do you remember in Luke chapter 9, they're passing through Samaria? Let me just read it for you. Luke chapter 9, we'll look at verse 51 through 56. Now it came to pass when the time had come for him, that being Jesus, to be received up, that he steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem. And he sent messengers before his face, and they went and entered a village of the Samaritans to prepare for him. But they did not receive him, because his face was set for the journey to Jerusalem. And when his disciples James and John saw this, they said, Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them, just as Elijah did? But he turned and rebuked them and said, Do you not know what manner of spirit you are of? For the Son of Man did not come to destroy men's lives, but to save them. And they went to another village. See, James and John had become hardened like the egg. They saw that these people didn't welcome Jesus, and they thought the appropriate response was to have God send down fire of condemnation on them. And Jesus reminds them, I didn't come to destroy men's lives. I came to save them. And when we get hardened to the world around us, we sometimes forget that the reason why we are here is to serve God, yes, but also to help others and to lead others to Him. Jonah is another example of someone who became hardened to the world around him. Jonah went up on a hill hoping to watch the destruction of Nineveh. Like, that's what he wanted. He doesn't really say it that way to us, but that's the picture I get. Jonah's just waiting. He's waiting for Nineveh to be destroyed. But that never happened. And rather than praising God that an entire city had repented, what does Jonah do? He pouts about not having any shade. Jonah had become hard. He became uncaring and bitter towards the salvation that God had given to these people. And the same kind of thing can happen to us. We can be hardened to the wickedness of the world around us, and we can start thinking like Elijah. Do you remember Elijah in 2 Kings chapter 19? Remember what he was thinking? He had just defeated the prophets of Baal, and he was thinking, God, I'm trying to serve you, but nobody else wants to be righteous. It's just me. And we can become surrounded by wickedness and the sin of the world, and frankly, the failures on our effort to convert people, that we can start thinking like Elijah. God, I'm trying, but it's useless. Nobody wants to be righteous. But you remember what God did? Remember how God responded to Elijah? First, he gave Elijah some work to do. Hey, you got some jobs here. Here's your jobs. Go appoint these kings. He gave him a companion. Appoint Elisha to be your replacement. And he reminded him that he's not alone. And I think we can take heart to that. The hardening caused by the world isn't just about whether or not we think others deserve God's plan of salvation. We can also become bitter. In particular, bitter towards the successes of the unrighteous. And the Bible seems to talk quite a bit about this. Jeremiah wonders in chapter 12 and verse 1, why does the way of the wicked prosper? Why are those happy who deal so treacherously? Job asks the same kind of rhetorical question in chapter 21, verse 7. Why do the wicked live and become old? Yes, become mighty in power. Even David in Psalm 73 and 3, for I was envious of the boastful when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. And if you're like me, and you're like Job, and you're like Jeremiah, and you're like David, you've done the exact same thing, haven't you? You've looked at the people in the world who have no interest in God, whose life is just one evil deed after another, and yet everything turns up roses for them. How is it that the wicked can prosper? Why is it that the wicked have it so easy? I know I've fallen into that trap. And God knew we would fall into that trap too. That's why he talks about it so much in the Bible. You know, I tell my girls a lot, maybe not as much as I should, maybe not as much as others, but comparison is the killer of joy. You ever heard that before? Comparison is the killer of joy. Because when you start thinking that somebody else has got it better than you, what are you doing? You're comparing yourself to them, and really you're forgetting what God has done for you. In a lot of ways, this is the root of bitterness, isn't it? The Bible talks about the root of bitterness. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 14 and 15. Pursue peace with all people and holiness, without which no one will see the Lord. Looking carefully, lest anyone fall short of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness spring up, causing trouble, and by this many become defiled. You see, bitterness causes trouble, doesn't it? When you start comparing and looking at the wickedness of the world and how they've done so good, and you're struggling, and you become bitter, you're causing trouble. Trouble both for yourself, right? Internal trouble, but also for those around you. There's one person who took on the name bitterness. Do you remember who that person was? That's Naomi. Naomi was an egg. Life hit Naomi pretty hard, didn't it? There was a famine. They left their home country. In a foreign land, Naomi's husband dies. Her sons die. One of her daughter-in-laws leaves her, and she's left to return to Israel with what? With nothing. She was a poor, beggarly woman with no real hope of that situation changing. Naomi's life was hard. And when she gets back and her friends and see her, and they start saying, "Oh, Naomi, Naomi." She says, "Don't call me Naomi." Remember what she says? Ruth chapter 1, verse 20 and 21. But she said to them, "Do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, and the Lord has brought me home again empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has testified against me, and the Almighty has afflicted me?" She wanted to be called Mara, and Mara means bitterness, because Naomi had become bitter. Don't be Naomi. Don't be an egg. So let me ask you, are you a coffee bean? When coffee is put into a boiling pot of water, something different happens. It doesn't become soft. It doesn't become hard. Instead, that coffee bean changes the boiling water into coffee, which some of you think is great. I think it smells wonderful and tastes atrocious. Yeah, I mean, parables all break down at some point, and this is where it breaks down for me. But the point is that the coffee does something different. Unlike the egg and the carrot, which are changed by the boiling water, the coffee changes its environment into something better. Sort of reminds me of what Paul has to say in Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Now here Paul's talking about how our life is supposed to be transformed and us not be conformed to the world. And this parable, this example is similar, but in a different kind of way, right? The coffee bean transforms its environment around it. And Christians ought to be coffee beans. We ought to have a positive impact on the world around us, rather than the world having an influence over us. And this seems to be the point Jesus makes. Now, Jesus doesn't talk about coffee beans. Instead, Jesus describes this as light and salt. In Matthew chapter 5, beginning in verse 13, Jesus says, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to throw out and trample underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." You see, Jesus says we are not coffee beans. Jesus says we are light and salt because we change the environment around us. See, salt, all of us like salt, right? Salt makes food taste better. All of us like light. Light reveals the unknown to us. And Jesus says we are salt and we are light. And we're supposed to have an impact to the world around us. That's the point he makes in verse 16. "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." Have an impact on the world around you. We're not going to transform the wicked world into something better. We just have to remember that. Okay, this is where the parable definitely breaks down. Okay, we as Christians will be in the world, and we are not going to make the wicked world a righteous world. But there are positive things that can come from our presence in the world. Now remember, the world, this boiling pot of water, is supposed to represent the tribulations, the trials, the adversity that we have in our lives. So how is it then that the world is made better when Christians have trials and temptations and adversities? Well, think about this for a moment. It was the persecution of the church following Stephen's death that led to the gospel being spread outside of Jerusalem. Now, a long time has passed since then, but we sure get the impression that the early Christians were quite content to stay in Jerusalem and fellowship with one another. And through persecution, God made the church scatter. Acts chapter 8, verse 1, "And at that time a great persecution arose against the church, which was at Jerusalem. And they were all scattered throughout the regions of Judea and Samaria, except the apostles." Skip down to verse 4. "Therefore those who were scattered went everywhere preaching the word." You see, it was persecution that caused the word to be spread. And we see this a lot in Acts. Paul and Silas, their imprisonment in Philippi, it directly leads to the conversion of the Philippian jailer. Would Paul and Silas have gone and talked with that Philippian jailer? I don't know. God made sure it happened, though. God used the persecution, the imprisonment of Paul and Silas, to have a positive impact on the Philippian jailer and his family. Later on, Paul uses his Roman imprisonment to preach to those in Rome. And if we read that story, we get the impression that he pretty much preaches the whole way to Rome. And trials also equip us to comfort each other and to comfort others. In 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 3 through 4, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our tribulations, that we may be able to comfort those who are in any trouble with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God." You see, when Christians are put under pressure. When we have afflictions, turmoils, whether it's the temptations of life or whether it's just life being hard, and God comforts us, that in turn allows us to comfort others. And that's one way in which we can shine our light to the world. So I'd encourage you, be a coffee bean. Be a coffee bean. When life hits you hard, how are you going to respond? Are you going to be a carrot and turn into mush? Are you going to be an egg and stiffen up and become bitter? Or are you going to be a coffee bean and make life better? I don't know, it's like the saying, if life gives you lemons, make lemonade. I'll take a glass of lemonade before I'll take a glass of coffee. Earlier we talked about the challenges of life and compared it to a boiling pot of water. We looked at a few verses that reminded us that as Christians, this life will be particularly challenging. And admittedly, I was a little deceptive because I only read part of the verses. I want you to hear the rest of the story. 1 Peter chapter 4, I read verse 12, but I want to read verses 13 through 14 as well. Beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trials which is about to try you, as though some strange thing happened to you. But rejoice to the extent that you are partakers of Christ's suffering, that when His glory is revealed, you may also be glad with exceeding joy. If you are reproached for the name of Christ, blessed are you, for the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. On their part, He is blasphemed, but on your part, He is glorified. Psalm 34 and 19. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers him out of them all. And John chapter 16, verse 33. These things I have spoken to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. Life is hard. But I assure you that this life will be so much easier than the life to come if you don't have Jesus in your life. Because what's coming for those who don't put their trust in God and don't serve God makes this life look like a cakewalk. But in this life, when we struggle and we have trials and temptations, when we have afflictions, God reminds us that He's right there with us. He's overcome the world. If you've not made Jesus your Savior, if you've not been baptized and have your sins washed away, you've got an opportunity now, as you do any time, to make yourself right. If you found that you've fallen away and you need to repent of sins, you've got an opportunity for that too. Or if there's just something in your life that is really hard, and you need the church to pray for you, or you need help, now's a good time too. Consider your soul as we stand and sing a closing number.